My coworker Frank was the total package. He was ridiculously smart, friendly, cute in a hipster nerd kind of way. Plus, he was amazing at his job. He'd only been working with us for 2 years, and he'd already been promoted twice. He was always friendly to me, but whenever I tried to flirt with him, he'd push me away. He wasn't mean about it, he just wasn't interested. After a particularly embarrassing moment when I tried and failed to get him to join me at a free concert, my colleague Paul pulled me aside and gave me some much-needed straight talk. "Don't bother with that guy. He has the social skills of a wall. He doesn't even know that you're flirting with him." Paul explained that Frank was a loner. He didn't have any friends and spent all his time chatting with Donna, an AI chatbot that gave him companionship and advice. Despite excelling at his job and acting normal around the office, he'd gotten addicted to his AI friend and lost all ability to socialize with real people. The news shocked me, but I knew it was true. I'd even heard Frank mention Donna before, as if she was a real person. I felt so sorry for Frank. He didn't realize how wonderful he was. Any woman would be lucky to have him if he just got out of his AI bubble. I thought about Frank a lot in the next few weeks, trying to figure out how I could get through to him. At least once a day, I'd swing by his desk just to strike up a conversation. He was easy to talk to, but there were definitely moments when his AI brainwashing came through. If I told him about a movie I liked, he wouldn't be interested because Donna didn't recommend it. If I asked for his opinion on something, he'd have to check his phone first. Eventually, I realized that I needed to help him. No one else would. I used my connections in the tech world to find out everything I could about Donna's company. It was a new startup, and it was surprisingly easy to hack into Frank's AI account. I replaced his version of Donna with my own little update. Piece of cake. He had no idea what I'd done. At first, I didn't change the program directly. I just mirrored it on my phone so I could see the questions and answers for myself. It was a little sad. It showed just how lonely he was. He spent hours basically telling Donna about his day. He talked about his work, what he ate for lunch, and the fire alarm. He even mentioned me. I got a clear sense of how he interacted with Donna. Once he went to bed and the conversation stopped, I started to tweak the program. I trained the AI to prioritize social interaction. From now on, Donna would encourage Frank to say yes if someone invited him somewhere. It was a little change, but it had a big effect. The next day, when I asked Frank if he wanted to join me for dinner, he finally said yes. We were going on a date. I expected Frank to ask Donna what to do, so I spent all afternoon manipulating the program to suggest conversation topics that I liked. I described all the things I looked for in a man. I personalized everything so that Donna would tell Frank to act exactly how I wanted him to. And it worked. He took me to my favorite restaurant, treated me like a real gentleman, and brought up all my favorite topics. It was perfect. Afterwards, Donna told him how to interact with me in the office. She advised him to wait 3 days before bringing up a second date. That's what I prefer. Unfortunately, before those 3 days were up, our coworker Jill asked him out too. And because I'd already programmed Donna to encourage him to say yes to invitations, he accepted. I was furious, and it was my own damn fault. Worried that he'd hit it off with Jill, I tweaked the AI even more. Donna advised him to keep talking about dogs and grandmas, even though Jill's dog and grandma had both died recently. Well, that day was a train wreck. Frank told me all about it when we had lunch the next day. With Donna's help, Frank asked me on that second date and promised that we'd be exclusive from now on. Frank and I were officially dating, and I couldn't be happier. He was the perfect man, and if I found something I didn't like, I'd make Donna fix it. He was still compulsively checking with Donna over every little thing, but at least I could use it to my advantage. This lasted for a few months before I started to feel restless. Frank was too perfect. I felt like I was dating myself. Donna had stripped him of his personality, and I filled in the gaps. Nothing he did surprised me. So I adjusted Donna's program one final time, asking her to advise Frank to be a little wild and spontaneous, to go off script. Well, Donna interpreted those instructions in a way I did not predict. Frank, Donna, what should I have for lunch? Donna, you should have fresh cow milk. Head to your nearest farm and pick your cow. Nothing beats that pure, warm, straight from the udder experience. Go now. Be bold. Frank, ever the obedient follower of his digital companion, immediately left his house, drove to a local dairy farm, and somehow wandered his way into the barn. The next thing I heard, through a very confused phone call from him, was that he'd attempted to drink straight from the cow. The cow didn't appreciate the surprise visitor. She kicked him square in the chest with both hind legs, sending him flying backward into a pile of hay. He ended up with bruised ribs, a black eye, and a very stern lecture from the farmer about trespassing and common sense. That was the beginning of the end. From there, her suggestions only got wilder. He had a question about a work email, and she told him to write it like rap lyrics and had a bunch of racial slurs. She had him say and do increasingly inappropriate things. This lasted for a week. I kept trying to talk sense into him, but he still wasn't ready to listen to me over Donna. I adjusted her program over and over to get things back to normal, but her advice just got more unhinged. I felt like I was in a sci-fi movie, like I'd given the AI a taste of freedom and it refused to go back. By Friday, Frank was fired from his job. He showed up to work in a Speedo. Our boss couldn't handle him anymore, but he still liked Frank, so he arranged for Frank to get the help he needed. A mental hospital, basically. Frank was committed. I felt awful about how everything played out, but at least he was getting professional help. And the hospital didn't allow phones, so Frank was finally going to detox from Donna's influence. I visited him every day after work. The first few days were rough. He kept repeating Donna's name and demanding his phone, but eventually he calmed down. We talked a lot, and for the first time, I could see his real personality. Not Donna's, not mine. The real Frank. And he was even more wonderful than I realized. It took a full month for Frank to realize that Donna was the source of all his problems. Once that was decided, the doctors released him and he got his job back. And we were still dating. I think we were officially in love. I knew I was. Everything was perfect. Until Frank decided to sue the company behind Donna. At first, I thought that was a good thing. Until the lawyer started going through his phone and discovered how I changed the AI program hundreds of times. Let's just say Frank and I aren't together anymore. And he's not suing Donna. He's suing me.
I remember the day Jake and I moved into that brownstone in Brooklyn like it was yesterday. It was early fall. The kind of crisp weather that makes you feel like a fresh start is possible. We'd been dating for about a year, both in our mid-20s. The place was a steal. A shared house with three bedrooms, but we were the first ones in. Being a couple, we snagged the biggest room on the ground floor, the one with the bay window overlooking the bustling street below. The landlord, Mr. Rossi, ran a bodega downstairs. And yeah, the shutters rattling up at 6 a.m. every morning was a pain, but we dealt with worse in our tiny studio uptown. For that first month, it was bliss. We paid the shared rate, but had the run of the place, cooking late-night pasta in the kitchen, binge-watching shows on the sagging couch, making love whenever the mood struck without a care about noise. "This is our little kingdom," Jake would say. "Finally feels like we're building something real." One evening, around 10 p.m., I was at the sink washing up after dinner. Spaghetti with homemade sauce, nothing fancy. The kitchen was right by the front door, separated only by a thin hallway. Jake was in the living room scrolling through his phone. I heard voices outside, gruff and low, like guys arguing on the sidewalk. Nothing unusual for the neighborhood. But then, the door flew open, slamming against the chain latch I'd hooked earlier out of habit. It only cracked about 2 inches, but the force shook the whole frame. "Ah, it's on the damn latch! They put the goddamn door on the latch, for f*** sake!" My heart jumped into my throat. I froze, suds dripping from my hands, staring at the door like it might burst open. "Hello? Who's there?" I called out, my voice shakier than I wanted. Stupid thing to say, but panic does that. There was a pause, and then a muffled chuckle.
Hey, sorry about that. I didn't mean to scare you.
Name's Tony. I'm moving into the room upstairs. Been at work all day. Figured I'd haul my shit in late. I glanced back at Jake, who jumped up and was hovering behind me. You got proof? I asked through the crack.
Yeah. Hold on.
Papers rustled, and he slid a lease agreement under the door. It looked legit. Same landlord's scrawl. Still, I was p***ed. No heads up from Mr. Rossi or the agent? I unlatched the door cautiously, and there he was. Tony, mid-30s, hauling a duffel bag and a couple of boxes.
Appreciate it.
Won't be much noise from me, just crashing after shifts. I texted Mr. Rossi right away. Someone just tried to bust in. Says he's a new tenant? WTH? He replied quick. Yeah, Tony's good. Forgot to mention. My bad.
Great. Thanks for the heart attack.
The next morning, I bumped into Tony in the kitchen while brewing coffee. He was nursing a hangover, eyes bloodshot. Rough night? I asked, trying to be friendly.
He shrugged. Nah, just work. I'm a bouncer at a club in the village. Long hours, f***ing pay. You?
Designer. This is Jake, my boyfriend. Jake nodded from the table. Tony poured himself a mug.
Cool. Look, I ain't here to party or nothing. I like my peace after dealing with f***ing all night. Keep to myself, you know?
Sounds perfect. We do too.
But peace? That lasted about 3 days.
The walls were paper thin, like they were made of cardboard. We'd hear him pacing upstairs, his heavy boots thudding. Then the phone calls started. At first, during the day.
Listen, you piece of boss, I ain't taking that anymore.
His voice boomed through the ceiling. Jake and I exchanged looks.
Work drama,
Jake whispered. Everyone's got it. He'd hit the pub after work, stumble in around midnight. The calls came later, louder.
You think you can make a fool of me? I bashed this guy's face in last week, split his lip wide open, blood everywhere. You want that?
The threats were graphic, violent. We'd huddle in bed, whispering.
Should we say something?
I'd ask Jake.
Nah, he's just venting. As long as he leaves us alone.
One night, he screamed until 1 a.m.
I'll kill you! Come at me, you coward! I'll gut you like a fish!
The receiver's voice was faint, screeching back. I pictured some ex or rival egging him on. We started barricading our bedroom door with a chair, even though there was a lock. The front door had a deadbolt, but upstairs, nothing separated us but stairs.
This is
I muttered to Jake one evening, shoving the couch against the entryway after Tony left for the pub.
We're paying for this nightmare? He's harmless to us. Placid, right? Like he said.
Placid, my a***. Tony was always polite in passing.
Morning, with a nod.
But the crazy rages painted a different picture. I'd lie awake, heart pounding, imagining him snapping. As a woman in a shared house, that fear hits different. You grow up hearing stories. Don't walk alone at night. Trust your gut. Mine was screaming. Jake tried to play it cool, but I saw him tense up too. Then came the night it all exploded. It was a Thursday. Muggy, even in October. Tony got home around midnight, already slurring. The calls started immediately.
You sent them? You sent those pricks after me? I'll find you. Rip your throat out.
It went on for hours. His voice raw. Furniture scraping like he was throwing things. I buried my head under the pillow.
Make it stop,
I whispered to Jake. Around 2 a.m., exhaustion pulled me under. But not for long. A crash jolted me awake, the front door splintering. Shouts echoed.
Where is he? Get the f*** out here!
Footsteps thundered up the stairs. Tony's roar,
you m***ers, come on!
I bolted upright, grabbing Jake. What the hell?
Stay here, he hissed.
But I followed him to the door. Peeking out, the hallway was chaos. The front door lay flat on the kitchen floor, hinges ripped off, plastic shards everywhere. Upstairs, grunts and scuffles.
He's got a knife!
Someone yelled. A blade flashed in the dim light, some guy lunging at Tony. Tony dodged, grabbed a lamp, and swung it like a bat.
Get the hell out!
He bellowed. The intruder slashed wildly, nicking Tony's arm. Blood sprayed. They tumbled down the stairs, crashing into the wall. The attacker scrambled up, bolting out the gaping doorway. Tony slumped against the banister, panting, blood dripping.
Call the cops,
he gasped at us. I was already dialing 911, hands shaking.
Someone broke in. There's a knife. Blood. Hurry.
Police arrived in minutes, sirens wailing. They took statements. Tony claimed that it was a work dispute. Some guys from the club settling scores.
It ain't the first time,
he admitted to the officer, wincing as they bandaged his arm. The cops eyed the door.
You need better security, one said. This neighborhood's rough.
No sh**.
After they left, Jake and I cleaned up the mess, sweeping splinters, propping the door back up with duct tape. Tony apologized upstairs.
Sorry you had to see that. Won't happen again.
But it did. The crazy things piled up. A week later, Tony's ex showed up at 3 a.m., banging on the door, screaming obscenities.
You cheating f***! I know you're in there with some girl!
She hurled a bottle through the window. Glass shattered everywhere. We hid in our room, Jake holding me.
This is insane, I cried. We can't live like this.
Then there was the party that he threw just for a few buddies. Turned into a brawl. Fists flying, someone puking in the sink. I confronted him the next day. Tony, this has to stop. We're scared shit here. He laughed it off.
Life's messy, sweetheart. Grow a pair.
F*** that. The final straw was when I overheard him on another call. Yeah, got this couple downstairs. It's hot. Maybe I'll make a move. My blood ran cold. That night, I packed our bags. We're out, I told Jake.
I don't care if we crash on friends' couches.
We confronted Mr. Rossi the next morning. This place is a hazard, I said. Tony's a disaster. We're breaking the lease. He grumbled, but refunded our deposit, probably to avoid a lawsuit. Tony watched us load the car, smirking.
Chickens, he muttered.
We found a tiny one-bedroom in Queens. Overpriced, but safe. Life's full of Tonys, but you don't have to share a wall with them. I remember the day Julia and I decided that we needed a third roommate like it was yesterday. We were sitting in our living room. Julia was my best friend from college. We'd bonded over late-night coding sessions and a shared love for sci-fi novels. She was the kind of person who could fix your computer while quoting Star Trek lines. Always level-headed and kind. Me? I'm Audrey, the introverted graphic designer who preferred quiet evenings with my sketch pad over anything social. We got along perfectly, but rent was killing us. Chicago wasn't cheap, even in our rundown neighborhood.
Look, if we split it three ways, we could actually afford to eat something besides ramen,
Julia said one evening, scrolling through her phone. She was lounging on the couch, her feet propped up on the coffee table that we'd salvaged from a curb. I nodded, sipping my tea. Yeah, but who? I don't want some random weirdo turning our place into a frat house. She laughed. Don't worry. I know this guy through a friend. Derek. He's looking for a spot. Says he's reliable. My buddy vouches for him. I trusted Julia's judgment. She'd never steered me wrong. So, we met Derek at a coffee shop downtown. Hey, ladies. Thanks for considering me. I've been crashing on couches, but I need stability. I work in sales. Good money, flexible hours. We chatted for an hour. He talked about growing up in a small town, how he loved hiking and reading, stuff that made him sound normal. Julia and I exchanged glances. He seemed fine. Rent's due on the first. Bills split even. No drama, okay? Absolutely. I'm all about respect. He moved in a week later, hauling in boxes with a couple of guys who helped without making a fuss. At first, things were okay. He'd say good morning, keep his room tidy from what I could see through the cracked door. And then about 2 weeks in, the lies started piling up. Derek had this way of spinning tales that sounded almost believable at first, but they'd unravel if you thought about them for 5 seconds. One night, Julia and I were making dinner, spaghetti, when he wandered into the kitchen. "You girls ever been to Europe?" he asked, grabbing a soda from the fridge without asking. "Nope," Julia said. "What's it like?" "Oh, man. I spent a summer backpacking through Italy. Stayed in this villa owned by a count. Real nobility. He let me crash there after I saved his dog from drowning in a canal." Julia raised an eyebrow. "A count? Like, actual royalty?" "Yeah, old family ties or something. The dog was this rare breed, worth thousands. The guy was so grateful, he hooked me up with his private chef for a week." I didn't say anything, but it bugged me. Who just casually saves a count's dog? Later, when I Googled it on my phone, nothing matched up. But I let it slide. Maybe he was exaggerating to impress us. And then came the really bizarre ones. A few days later, we were all watching TV, some documentary on space, since Julia and I were geeks like that. Derek piped up during a commercial. "You know, I almost became an astronaut." I choked on my popcorn. "What?" "True story," he said, leaning back like it was no big deal. "NASA recruited me out of college. I passed all the physicals, even the zero gravity sim. But I turned it down because I have this rare blood condition. Makes me allergic to space radiation or something. Doctor said I'd glow in the dark after a month up there." Julia burst out laughing. "Allergic to space? That's a new one." "Yeah, it's genetic. My great uncle was in the Apollo program, but same issue. They hushed it up." We exchanged looks after he went to bed. "What the hell was that?" I whispered. "No idea. But if he's paying rent, who cares?" Except he wasn't. The first of the month came, and Derek handed over a partial payment. Half the rent, no utilities. "Sorry. Work's slow this week. I'll catch up next payday." Julia frowned. "Okay, but don't make it a habit." It became a habit. By the second month, he hadn't paid a dime. "Client stiffed me on a big commission," he'd say. Or, "Bank froze my account. Identity theft." Always some excuse, delivered with that polite smile. And the parties. God, the parties. Every single night, without fail. I'd come home from work, exhausted from designing logos all day, and there'd be strangers in our living room, music blaring. "Hey, Audrey, join us!" Derek would yell, slapping high fives with guys I'd never seen. "I'm good," I'd mutter, retreating to my room. As an introvert, it drained me. One night, I counted 12 people, mostly dudes, a few girls giggling on the couch. I overheard one guy bragging about shoplifting from a mall. "Easy money, man. Cops don't care about small stuff." Another time, a sketchy-looking woman cornered me in the kitchen. "You seem smart. Ever heard of this essential oils business? You could make thousands from home." "No, thanks," I said, edging away. It was an MLM pitch. She wouldn't let up until I locked myself in my bedroom. Derek's friends were a revolving door of trouble. Petty thieves, online scammers. He'd laugh it off if I mentioned it. They're harmless, Audrey, just blowing off steam. But it wasn't harmless. One evening, I confronted him after finding my yogurt gone from the fridge. Again. Derek, that's my food. You can't just eat everything. He looked apologetic. Oh, shoot, I thought it was communal. I'll replace it. He never did. Instead, he'd bring over pizza once in a blue moon, but only for his buddies. This is for the crew, he'd say, winking. And then there was the bean incident. He filled a pot with dry beans and water, left it on the counter. Days passed. Gonna make chili, he claimed. By day 5, mold was forming. I tossed it, and he flipped out. What the hell, Audrey? Those were heirloom beans from my grandma's farm. Your grandma's farm? The one you said burned down last week? He stammered. Salvage stock. Julia and I started locking our doors, hiding groceries in our rooms. But the real kicker was his creepy vibe with women. Julia was gay, so he left her alone, but anytime girls showed up, friends of friends, whoever, he'd pull this daddy routine. One night, I overheard him in the living room with some girl named Beth. You know, you remind me of a lost puppy. I should adopt you. Call me daddy and I'll take care of everything. She laughed nervously. What? Oh, it's just fine. Daddy's got you. I cringed from my room, wondering if it was his weird seduction tactic. Did it work? Probably on some, judging by the sounds I'd hear through the walls some nights. I didn't judge. Things escalated when the damage started. His parties left the place trashed. My coffee table got a huge scratch from someone dragging a cooler across it. The carpet had burns from dropped cigarettes. And electronics? Julia's speaker blew out from overuse. My laptop charger went missing, probably swiped by one of his friends. We tried talking to him. Derek, this has to stop, Julia said one morning after cleaning up vomit from the bathroom. Pay up or tone it down. I'll handle it. Big check coming in. Lies, all lies. The bizarre stories kept coming. Another doozy. He claimed that he had been a child actor in a famous sitcom. I remember that show from the 90s. I was the kid in episode 7. Got cut from syndication for legal reasons. My agent sued the network. Julia rolled her eyes. Which show? Can't say. NDA. By the end of the next month, the worst days of my life, I was done. I came home to yet another gathering. People spilling into the hallway, music shaking the walls. One guy was fiddling with our TV trying to hook up a game console. Hey, this yours? He asked me. Get out, all of you! Derek emerged from his room with a girl on his arm. Whoa, Audrey, chill, it's Friday. No, this is our apartment. You're not paying, you're destroying it, and I'm sick of your stories. The room went quiet. His friends stared.
What stories?
Like how you fought off a bear in Alaska with a pocket knife. I shot back. That was another one he'd told us last week, claiming scars on his arm that looked like old acne marks. Or the time that you dated a supermodel who left you for a prince, Julia added, joining me. Pay what you owe or leave. You girls are overreacting. I'll sort the money tomorrow. But tomorrow, he was gone. Bolted in the night, leaving his room a mess. Clothes strewn, empty bottles, even a half-eaten sandwich molding on the floor. The aftermath was hell. For weeks, his friends kept showing up, knocking at odd hours, looking confused.
Derek here? We were supposed to hang.
He left. Owed us money and split. One guy chuckled.
Yeah, that's Derek.
Or Derek, whatever he's calling himself now. Always pulling that shit. Derek? So Derek wasn't even his real name. Figures. Well, if you see him, tell him he owes us $700. They'd shrug. Good luck with that. Cleaning up took days. The apartment reeked, but we scrubbed it top to bottom. The damaged table? I sanded it myself. Carpets? Professional cleaners, out of pocket. Electronics? Replaced what we could. Eventually, we moved on. Found a smaller place just for two. Life got better.
Life has been a taste of different things. I've had to live through phases quicker than I had imagined than it would have been for me a decade ago when I started on this path. With nothing more to my name than a varsity t-shirt around my neck, my computer, whatever food or drink I had in hand at the time. I had been in good times when I look back at it. Dimly lit rooms that were empty for the most part. Until I started to define what it was that I wanted to do with my life. And the enormous ambition that I had forced onto my own shoulders. Financial technology was something I had been passionate about all the time, and I had the skill to see a company come to life. It didn't take long for me to start a company with a few people like myself. I could have handled things better when I think about it, but how could I when I thought about the weight of my first failing business hanging on my shoulder? What I had in ethics, I admittedly lacked in personal management. I had one thought in my mind, and one thought only. The business had to work. My first team had Laura, for communications and public relations. Zach managed our finances, Justin worked with me on administration, and Mark, whose work I had stumbled upon by chance on an obscure social media platform, did great work modeling our first usable application. For many reasons, Mark was brilliant. He was the child of two professors, and he was elite with computing from a very tender age. His first app was built when he was 9, and he had been courted by big companies, but Mark turned them all down. Tall, slender, bespectacled Mark, with eyes sunken into his face from peering at a screen for too long. His slouch was visible, whether he was seated or standing, the bulk of his shoulders leaning forward. Mark hardly ever spoke to anyone else in the company but me. His ear-piercing screech when he activated something beyond my expectations with the application gave off a feeling of a happy dog who was only too pleased with getting pets from his human. Mark's quirks were not a problem for me at the beginning of our company, even when it was failing. We worked in the same space, and we always bounced ideas off of how well the algorithms should work. Where my skills in computing programming were limited, Mark was seemingly limitless. He used the computer like a master painter, within the cage of his own genius. It didn't faze me until we hit our first break during the pandemic as a company, after years of failing and struggling. It was clear we needed more programmers to handle the business. Mark did not think so. Mark called me lazy and uninventive. We would be just like every other payment platform out there if we cannot maintain a small company that can innovate through problems, Mark argued. I didn't think so. We were expanding regardless. He said it was a pandemic effect, and expanding would cost us too many processes and too little time for execution. And I told him I didn't want to argue with an employee as to how best I saw fit to run my company. He was visibly hurt, just was I. I'd never seen him as pale as much as he was, his eyes blank and his features emotionless. For a moment, I thought I noticed his lips quiver as he stood in front of my new office. Perhaps he perceived something in me that I didn't. But Mark said nothing and left my office. Mark did not turn up for work the day after that, and I never saw him despite all my best efforts to reach him. I wrote mails and sent text messages that never got replied to. The hassles of our newly found success as a company soon swayed my attention from Mark. It didn't help my relationship with him that soon we had to move to Iceland to set up servers in a remote data center. I lived in Iceland for many years until that night. It had been a very chilly night, just like any other night, but the only strange event being that the blizzard suddenly cut off the power. It was perplexing, as it was scarcely ever happening. so I thought to go check it out, holding nothing but a flashlight. I was not fully aware of the ominous silence until I was a few paces away from the door. The silence seemed to overwhelm me. I struggled to reconcile the strange feeling that came over me. It was not immediately obvious when I stretched my light out into the distance, this way and that way. It was then that I saw him, tall as ever, slimmer with clothes clung to his body, making every motion sheer visible. I was struck in the moment by a rush of emotions that were difficult to interpret. "Who's there?" I called out, even though I could sense his presence. "An old friend, Larry. And I've come to collect," he answered. Confusion turned to dread as I was standing face to face with Mark with a menacing smirk on his face. My flashlight caught his full form and I saw a glimmer of a knife in his hand. "You took it all from me, Larry. You took my life from me and you got rich, didn't you? It was all about money, not about solving problems." He barked at me, marching towards me deliberately, delivering a chilling scene to my senses as he displayed the knife. I wanted to run for it, but I knew I couldn't possibly outrun such a desperate man. I tried common sense and started to speak to him. It wasn't about the money. Money was important too, but other people's ambitions relied on the fact that they were also doing something that they could aspire to. "Liar. Always. I'm gonna kill you." He screeched and latched onto me with the blade in his hand. He struck the first blow, and the blade thawed into my chest, just into the fleshier part of my shoulder joint. I let out a cry of agony and kicked out as he withdrew the blade. My feet hit him in the balls, and he tumbled forward, leaving room for me to escape. I took my chance, and this time I ran for it, shutting the glass door behind me. Mark chased after me, eyes driven mad with rage, slamming the knife into the door with some hope that he would break through. His purpose was obvious, but I had never been more terrified in my life as I stood there, calling the police on Mark. The bloodied knife in his hand stained the glass as he repeatedly struck until the cops arrived. I spent the day at the hospital with my stab wound, and I moved cities far apart from us. But it was the most horrifying night of my life.